The ninth gene key. The transformational path of the ninth gene key moves from inertia to invincibility. That's the path of determination. The taming power of the small. This is the lovely name given to this gene key, this hexagram in the original translation of the I Ching. And it's perhaps one of the more overlooked gene keys. And as you may know, that means it may well be worth looking into in more depth. Originally, the symbolism here is of the wind and the sky accompanied by the threat of rain. And the symbolism is that the wind is only just strong enough to keep the rains at bay. And at the time when the I Ching was written, King Wen, who was one of its originators, was threatened with war from his neighbours, and he only managed to keep them calm by a continuous stream of friendliness, hence the meaning of this hexagram. And I really like this image. It makes me kind of smile. The continuous stream of friendliness that keeps war at bay. A good image for beginning this, understanding this one. And at the shadow, this is inertia. So the elemental energy in this gene key brings a focus on subtle activities rather than grand plans and gestures. Life can be overwhelming at times, and even the best laid plans can go awry. As one Scottish poet put it, you know, life can get us down. This is a truth that we have to live with. And the I Ching, the gene keys, they're a map of the changing cosmic forces of our lives. And how we respond to challenges dictates the pattern of our destiny. And if you succumb to the shadow frequency, if you indulge your negativity for too long, it will drain you of your life force. It will suck you dry. So the evolutionary movement towards awareness and towards the light can be fraught with disappointments. You know, we make a grand leap only to have a grander fall. And sometimes we feel we're back where we started, and sometimes we feel we haven't really got anywhere at all. These are the kinds of feelings that plague the ninth shadow. It's part of the codon ring called the ring of light. So at the shadow, this is the ring of darkness. And the darkness presses in upon us. It coerces us to yield to it. And it causes us inertia. You know, sometimes when we gaze at the world, it's as though we are standing before this kind of vast mountain. And we look up and it stretches so far, far above us. And we think, how are we ever going to get up and over that impossible looking peak? You know, the very looking at it makes our knees feel weak. So what's the point of even trying? That's how the shadow has us think. These are the kind of thoughts that drag us down. And these are the feelings that make us sag. And many of us these days live exhausting lives. We spend a great deal of our lives labouring under fatigue. We don't live beautifully and simply. We don't spend time with the elements, with the sun and the trees. You know, on the way to this, doing this audio, I decided to stop the car and get out and enjoy the sun. You know, it was a beautiful day. My mind wants to get on with the job at hand. You know, another audio done, the mind says, and then just a few more and you'll be able to rest. You know, that's how the mind thinks. And anyway, as I started to enjoy the sun, I just forgot all about the gene keys and the ninth gene key, which is the one I was contemplating. And I just entered into concert with the sun and the elements. And I had the most wonderful time. You know, it was an hour or so, and it was a beautiful morning, and I was just adrift in the light. And this is exactly what the ninth shadow doesn't want you to do. It wants you to be a victim. It doesn't want you to cultivate your own essence. It wants to lie down and give up. And the dilemma of this gene key is perspective. If you're looking up at the whole mountain, you feel overwhelmed. If, however, you decide just to look down at your feet, maybe you'll be captivated. The taming power of the small teaches us then to focus on small changes. You make small changes rather than attempting great things. And this is how we keep the shadow at bay. It's how people attain great things in life. They focus on small goals, small successes. You know, lots and lots of small successes add up to victory. So bring your attention to the small, to the details that make up your life. And try and make a small change. You know, if you have a negative pattern that's undermining you, don't take on the whole thing all at once. It'll probably floor you. Just try and make a small change. Now, maybe you're trying not to react in a charged situation with someone. Well, don't expect miracles. Just try and not react once. And then when you achieve that, congratulate yourself inwardly. You've succeeded. Hug that victory close, because if you can do it once, you can do it again. And this is the change in perspective that is needed at every level to move beyond the grip of the ninth shadow. Look at the small things. Stay in the present. Then you won't even notice it, but one day you'll find yourself halfway up the mountain. And that's how we bring the light of awareness into our lives. Small steps, small steps. The ninth gift, determination. The gift of determination. Determination may be a misunderstood term. It sounds like it involves a great deal of power or force or discipline or willpower. Again, this is why we fall victim to the shadow of inertia, because we see how much energy it's going to take us to get from A to Z. And we just feel that we don't have that kind of energy or that kind of commitment. So we just give up. But we've just seen that it's simply about small steps. You take the first step. You know, actually, the first step is the hardest. It's easy because it's just one step, but the full weight of inertia is before you. So you have to be brave and you have to be the most determined, but only in the beginning. You know, think about this with your life. Maybe there's something you'd like to do, but you're afraid to do it. You're afraid to begin it, to take it on. So just take the first step. You see what it takes? What a threshold something so simple can be. You know, I have a friend, he calls it the long door mile. You know, it's like when you're trying to get out of the house with children. You've got everything ready and you've only got to get to school or something, but the distance from your door to the car is so huge because of all the, you know, it's that kind of bottleneck of getting children out the door and remembering everything and waiting for everyone and all of that. It's the long doorstep mile. And it's also the same with other things. You know, it's like you, once you're out there, it's wonderful, but it's just that first stage of getting out the door into nature or wherever it is. You know, that's what this is about. Your mind sees the whole mountain. So don't look at the whole mountain. Look down at your feet and just take the first step. And once you've made that first step, every single step that comes after it becomes easier. Now, there may be big obstacles and breakthroughs on your journey, but that first step is with you every other step, and its power is incalculable. So even if you fall from the path, that first step can bring you back on again. And then we come to the power of repetition. You know, the programming partner of this gene key is the 16th gift of versatility and the city of mastery. And versatility comes through repetition. You do something over and over until it becomes imprinted, not just inside your cellular being, but also within the cosmos. You know, there are forces and laws that uphold the cosmos, and they are irrefutable. So if, for example, you pray for something over and over again from your heart, one day that prayer must be granted, so long as it's a selfless prayer, because that's a universal law. So you can only be versatile when you've determined the pathway forwards. And this is the beauty of the word determination, because it also holds the notion of predetermination, that once you get in the groove, the practice you're doing, it kind of holds itself up. The cosmos steps in to help you attain it. And it feels like this is something that just wants to happen. You know, it's like my son. His name's Ambrose. And he's at that stage in his development, you know, when he has a body like Adonis. You know, he's 11. And everything is in perfect proportion. And then he went to this version of the Olympic Games. You know, it's something done by all the Steiner Waldorf schools. So all the boys and girls at this stage are kind of studying the Greeks. And they come together to reenact the Olympic Games in one place. And it mirrors their stage of physical development. Anyway, Ambrose knows that his bigger brother, at the same stage in his life at the Olympics, he won the marathon, which is a big deal. It's not actually a real marathon. It's kind of a bit more than a mile. But anyway, there's about 300 kids, you know, and it's the race that kind of carries the most kudos. So Ambrose really wants to win this thing. And it's a big ask. You know, there's a lot of others who also want to win it. And looking at Ambrose, you know, he's not the tallest kid, he's not the wiriest, he's not the most muscular, he's quite average in height and build, so there's no clear advantage. But he has one advantage, as it turns out, which is his will. You know, he won the race. He won it. I didn't think I could handle another one, actually. I was almost in tears when my eldest boy won it 4 years earlier. So I had all those emotions well up in me. Again, that fatherly pride and the ecstasy of knowing that he'd attained what he wanted so much. But the thing is, he was pitted against faster boys. And maybe if he had raced again, he might not have won it. But he knew he only had to win it once. So he just threw all his will into that. To that one race, and there was no ounce of his being left out in his effort. So it was almost as though he knew that it was a defining moment in his inner life. And if he hadn't won it, it would also have been fine. But for me, it was a lesson in will. If you can make one breakthrough inside yourself, you can make others. You will make others. You know, Ambrose's victory was a big one, but there were many small ones that preceded it. You know, not least his brothers paving the way for him. So the gift of determination can also include working together with others, encouraging others, and learning from others. You create your karma of tomorrow today. That's the power of focusing on the present. So whatever your difficulties in life, bring your attention and your determination into the small, everyday, local details, and make your changes there. That's the foundation of magic, the transmutation of the small, the taming power of the small into light and into truth. The ninth city, invincibility. Invincibility. I love the playful nature of the I Ching. You have these two gene keys, the ninth gene key, the taming power of the small, and then there's the 26th gene key, the taming power of the great. So these two are intimately connected. And their cities are invincibility and invisibility, just a kind of letter or two difference in the word. And again, we have a word that sounds like it's so powerful. Invincibility sounds like a kind of great archangel wielding a sword or a great of power. And that's our masculine word bias in English, because if you read the Tao Te Ching, it will tell you that the invincible is actually in the weak, not in the strong. And here we come back to the origin of this hexagram in the I Ching. It's about weakness leading strength. Remember? The old king controlled his warring neighbours through friendliness. Not through any show of strength, but through friendliness, through kindness. And the ninth city can have special powers. You know, along with the 26th city, the ninth city is about eternity in a grain of sand. I'm reminded of Mother Julian of Norwich, the medieval mystic. You can find out all about her in my free series, The Ecstatics. Anyway, she was a mystic who received God's transmission in a series of showings or revelations. And in one of her revelations, she's famously shown a tiny object before her, the size of a hazelnut. And she marveled at it and asked God what it was, to which he replies, "It is all that ever was and all that ever shall be." And in icons of Mother Julian, you'll see them, you can Google them. You can see her holding this tiny hazelnut. It's the essence of the world. And this is the magic of the ninth city, that it can reduce everything down to its essence. And the essence, of course, is love. So the most powerful force in the universe is the feminine. It's water. It's the void. It's tenderness. It's the pure aeternus, you know. I have to tell you another story here. The Pua Aeternus is the eternal child. You know, and the story, you know, these are my personal contemplations after all. So I apologize in a way that it's always often about my children. But if you have children of your own, you'll know that they are the greatest teachers of truth. So anyway, this morning, I went out to see the sunrise with my daughter. She's 9 years old. And there we are watching the most exquisite jewel of a sunrise. And there's all this mist hanging over the meadows. And the golden light is streaked through it in this kind of beatific haze. And it's truly magical, otherworldly. And Ursula, she turns to me and she says, "Daddy, can I run into that?" Well, I'm not going to say no. Because even though it's soaking wet, long grass, I mean, I kind of had the same feeling, you know, anyway. So off she goes, running and leaping into the golden dawn and this mist and this, you know, skipping through the long, damp, misty grass. And as I watched her, I realized I was watching something immortal. You know, I just had a moment. And if I could carry any single memory with me until the end of time, I would choose that moment. You know, the young, innocent girl skipping through a field of magical, misty light. You know, it was rapturous. It was enchanting. You know, but afterwards, as I contemplate it, I realize that that is invincibility. It isn't me, the father, the strong, the protector, the yang. It's the mystery of the childlike, of the innocent, of the weak. You see, it isn't really weak. It's just delicate and subtle. This is the pure Eternus, the immortal child, the golden child. It's a myth that's crept out into the world. And it's this spirit that makes us invincible. It's all the yin qualities, softness, surrender, yielding, play, subtlety. That's God. Those are the qualities of divinity, of the ring of light. To be invincible, you have to give up your identity, your attachment to the form, and you have to dive into life. You have to die to be reborn in eternity. And only that which has already died can be invincible. And then, of course, there's no death. There's only our love, cradled in the palm of love. Like a tiny hazelnut, eternal and precious, and sweet beyond measure.